Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Group of Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Ryan.
For those who would care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God?
God, give us serenity to accept things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 12. Please welcome our panel, Adita and Will. And step 12 states, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I will read the paragraphs and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings. Our first paragraph is on page 96. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else.
My name is Adita. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 8/27/12, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor other guys, and I have a home group, which is Larchmont 12 and 12 meets at 8 o'clock tonight. So if you want to double up, you can come over there as well. let's see. I have never had somebody read this volume before talking to them. I've never had that experience, but it says that, have them read this volume, and if he's ready to go through these steps, do that. But I guess that's, you know, maybe that's the way it's done for some folks, but that wasn't my experience. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. For me, having a sponsor and sponsoring other guys, that connection that I get from another person, that story that they told me about their drinking, made me realize that I could do this as well. when they talked about when my sponsor shared stories of his drunken escapades, it made me realize, and then to see him sitting across from me sober made me realize that that was actually possible in my life. So I always let people know, it says, let him know you're available if he wishes to make that decision. I always tell guys that I talk to that, like, you're always welcome to, if somebody else can get you the message or you can hear it from someone else, then that's totally okay too. There's no, I don't feel bad one way or the other. Helping other guys helps me stay sober. So there's that. And I guess that's all I got on this.
Thanks.
My name is Will Cheney. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Will.
Very grateful to be asked to carry the message of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. And I have a sponsor. I sponsor other men, two of them who brought me here tonight. I'm very grateful for that. And I have a home group, Friends of Bill W. out in Suffolk. I have a service position. I'm the literature guy. Most weeks I get to go on Wednesday and stop and see Pat and pick up some books. And then I go meet with my sponsor, and we go out to the psych center. And most weeks Morgan's there. And we get to be with the lost sheep and look into their eyes. And I'm always, my gratitude goes through the roof. And I was a lost sheep, and I've been found. My sobriety date is July 27th, 2009. My birthday is July 24th, and that all goes together. When I started that last 3-day binge on my 59th birthday, it was not much different than any other binge I've started. I had that sense of exhilaration and euphoria. Alcohol was still working for me. I had invited 3 friends to town to attend a concert in Harbor Park. Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson, and John Mellencamp, 3 of my favorites. And 3, they all love them too. And I'd bought the tickets. I had a driver hired to take us over there. And I was a grandiose kind of alcoholic. I like to take care of everything. And all I remember about the concert, I promised my friends I would be sober when they got there. And I got so excited, that didn't happen. And all I remember about the concert was hearing some music. I couldn't tell you any of the songs. And they were supposed to stay till Monday. And when I came to that Sunday morning, at 7 in the morning, they were all gone. And I once again experienced that state of being our book calls pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I'd experienced it many times, but this time it was the full effect. I've come to believe that it's a cumulative experience of suffering over the years. And there was nothing left to do but crack open a bottle of liquor and start drinking it. I drank it right out of the bottle, and to see if I could chase that suffering away once more, like I'd always been able to do in the past. I remember that first drink. I don't remember much else after that. I don't remember the last drink. All I know is when I came to the next day, I was done, and I was scared to death because I had no idea what my life would look like. And I suffered horribly that day, My older brother in Florida with the AA experience connected me with a 12-stepper who gave me some hope that night. And at 3 in the morning, slumped on the sofa in the dark, I looked upward in a weak voice. I said, God, please help me. There was nothing left to do. There was nowhere else to turn. And God's grace rushed in to fill that void I was experiencing. And it didn't last very long, but I had a sense of warmth, and I knew I was not alone in that room, and there was no one else in the house. I was able to get some sleep after that, and that night a man came and took me to my first meeting, and he bought me a big book. And 3 days later, he'd take me to a meeting, and I met the man that would become my sponsor. And it was as if a light was shining on him. There were other people, I think Leanne might have been there. There were other people happy to be at that big book study, but he was the one I saw smiling and laughing. And I couldn't tell you what he said, but God picked him for me. I didn't have to pick a sponsor. Now, I didn't ask him right away. Fortunately, the guy that took me to my first meeting later on would say, well, have you decided on a sponsor? And I mentioned that fellow's name. He said, I think that's an excellent choice. All I did was make a phone call, and he said, you're going to be at the picnic on Saturday. And the only reason I said yes was I heard a pretty girl say she would be there. And I went to the picnic, and the girl wasn't there, but he was. And we had this conversation where he said, well, tell me why you believe you're an alcoholic. I would answer that question totally differently today, but I guess my answer was good enough, and he shared some of his experience, strength, and hope, and then he asked me if I was willing to go to any lengths to win victory over alcohol. I had no idea that he was giving me a blueprint that day, a blueprint to how I would carry the message to the newcomer the rest of my life. And he began to give me directions and guided me to take simple actions that began to help me. And making the coffee and being the intergroup rep. And I was so blessed that 6 months on my fourth step, as I remember it, wanting to die, even though I was doing everything asked of me. And a man came up to me before the book study and said, will you sponsor me? And I was so excited, I just blurted out, yes. I knew better than to go to my sponsor and say, what should I do? I just said yes. And that man, he wasn't ready like me. He was defiant, he was rebellious, he was the best sponsor God could have put in my life. And that's what turned things around for me eventually and brought me to that spiritual awakening, was helping another alcoholic. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, our second reading will be over on page 98. It says, it is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house.
So I've been to one meeting in like 8 days, which I went to 6 meetings the week before, so I thought it'd kind of carry over. It doesn't really work that way, but with travel last week and the holidays, it was just kind of a little rough. So I sat here and just listened to you share, and it's just like, I love being an AA. I love this. Like, everything gets quiet when I'm here, and it's instantaneous. I love that. I'm here to share, but like getting that for me is awesome. So I also love in this book whenever we have one-word sentences. It's my favorite. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. It's just like bullshit, man. Like, I love this. This is the toughest thing for me to understand when I came in, and it's the toughest thing to explain to other people. I remember sitting across from a friend who had a lot of time, and we went out to dinner after a meeting, and it was just him and me, and we just sat there, and I must have talked for about half an hour about all the crap going on in my life and relationships, work, finance stuff, all this stuff that was just miserable. And I was just, I'll do this once I get all that right, you know. And I was just, he just listened for half an hour. And then as I stopped, he just took a sip of his soda and he put it down. And he goes, well, maybe you just shouldn't try so hard. You know, just do this and all of that will take care of itself. And that's the faith part. That's really hard for me to do because I'm a logical person. I need to know that if I do A, then B will happen, you know. but for somebody to say, hey, let's just do these steps. Let's just go to some meetings. And all that other stuff will work itself out is really, really hard for me to do. And the only way it happens is through experience. Because I'll fight. But every time it happens, and I get a little closer to God, and I start to trust in God a little more, it gets easier the next time. I had a few weeks ago, someone in my home group was talking about how they had just gotten a puppy. And they were talking about how they felt God disciplined them the way they're supposed to discipline a puppy. And I didn't know this, but she had watched some videos or something. And the videos were like, when the puppy's not doing what you want, you take it by the neck and you hold it down on the ground and it's going to squirm and fight and all that. But eventually the puppy gives up and that's how you discipline the puppy. And she's like, and that's what God does to me. God like just holds me down and I'm going to squirm and I'm going to fight until I give up and that's how I get disciplined. And that's me. I'm really defiant. So explaining this to other people though and getting other people to understand that if we just do this, all that other stuff will work out. It's like they just gotta do it. And then what's cool is I've had guys come up to me and be like, oh, so that's what you meant, you know, like when it actually happens. It's a type two kind of understanding where like, it's not gonna be that logical thing. It's after you just do this, like for me, after I do it, then I can look back and be like, that's what y'all meant. And I also love this sentence, the only condition is that you trust in God and clean house. That's the 12 steps right there. So, thanks.
Will Alcoholic, I was very fortunate that my sponsor began to teach me how to set boundaries. And I remember my brother, I let myself be manipulated into taking a box fan to Florida in my SUV, and I hate things that rattled in my car. And I called my sponsor, and he said, Will, you took the bait. And I said, that's right. I allowed him to, and I told him I'd do it, and I went ahead and did it with a good attitude. And, but I haven't taken the bait since. And he taught me things like, well, you don't ever loan or borrow money in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I took that to heart, and I believe it served me well. I had this sponsee, he called himself an urban explorer, and this was many years ago. And he pitched a tent out behind the shelter in Portsmouth because he didn't want to stay in the shelter, and I kind of admire that. And you go in the shelter and take a shower, but he was too proud to stay in the shelter. And I remember going into the 7-Eleven with him one day, and he said, "Well, I really need some chew. I just don't have any money." And I was smoking at the time, and I get it. And I said, "Sure, I'll take care of that." But having these boundaries and working and being practicing detached love with alcoholics that I help is very beneficial to me, that I don't get emotionally wrapped up in their lives. And so that man, he told me that when he picked up his 30-day chip, that he was never going to drink again unless he got cancer. It wasn't too long after that 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 he got drunk and he didn't have cancer, and I was diagnosed with cancer and I didn't get drunk. I love that. And it was one of the most wondrous experiences of my life. I looked up and I said, God, you take care of that. I'll go get the treatment and do what I'm supposed to do, but I'm going to keep doing what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous and helping others and going to a meeting every day. And I went off to South Florida for treatment for 2.5 months, and it was just an incredible experience. And I found myself a home group at 7 a.m. And there was a newcomer there that first day that I was able to help while I was there. And I'd get up and take a power walk and then swim some laps and go to that home group. And I danced in and out of treatment. I never experienced any pain or fear. And during that time, not only did I help that man, I worked the steps on the phone with a sponsee back here. I came to realize that the cancer treatment was secondary. I was there to help that man. And I hadn't talked to him in a couple of years. He's still down there in South Florida. He's still sober. And he called me recently, and we had the most wonderful conversation. It gives me such joy to work with others. I remember coming in and looking around. You know, I still had a house by the grace of God and my second wife. I still had a retirement account and a job and a car and a driver's license. And I looked around at all the alcoholics that had lost not only everything, but everybody. And I said, Will, this is your cue. You need to devote yourself to helping others and giving them rides and doing whatever you can. And I'm very grateful for the life that God has given me to be able to do this. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, continuing on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
All right. So, domestic problems, divorce, separation. I don't have a wife or kids when I got sober. I don't have a wife and kids right now, actually. I don't have domestic issues in that respect. I have family issues. Yeah, like family stuff. Like the people I hurt the most were those closest to me. My parents, my sister, relationships that I had been in. Those were the people that suffered the greatest, and I didn't see that suffering because it was just me drinking. I didn't see how that affected those around me. But when I got sober, I blamed a lot of them for why I drank the way I did. It was the way I was raised, you know, which was totally fine. There was nothing wrong, you know. I was finding things. And then when I did an inventory, I saw maybe that wasn't really true and I had made stuff up in my head. But this idea that I should concentrate on my own spiritual demonstration was I watched relationships change, the way people interacted with me and I interacted with them and our relationship, like with my family, and I started to think about myself as like a puzzle piece, and like all the areas of my edges that jut out or kind of come in, whatever, other people connect to me in those ways. But as I get sober and I practice my own spiritual life and continue to grow in that, my edges start to change and I start to change as a person. And I find that those people that are closest to me, if they're going to still stay connected to me, the way we fit together had to change. And it wasn't anything I did to them, it was just me working on me. And my relationship, for example, with my family got a lot better. The last 7 years of my drinking, I had pretty much cut my parents out of my life, I didn't really have a good connection with them. And early on in sobriety, in the first couple of years, there were some discussions that had to happen that were not easy. I feel like it almost, things got strained a little bit more before they started to get better. But over time, you know, I start to let those people in and things do improve. And just a few weeks ago, in October, it was pretty cool. I've been going to the national parks a lot and exploring them. And going with different friends or family members, and I got a cabin up in Acadia in Maine at Acadia National Park, and I took my folks, just me and them, and it was awesome to like take them up there during like peak fall foliage season and just like spend time with them. And I have that like space and time forever now, even when they're not here. I will have that. And that wasn't possible when I got sober. So I appreciate that. I love this. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. They could have ended the sentence just argument and fault finding are to be avoided. But they said like the plague, which is pretty serious. So, I see that like fighting and arguing with people and blaming was not helpful. I just had to work on me and everything else changed. It says little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. And that's been my experience with it. Other people changed because I changed and it wasn't anything I did or said to them. It was more my own actions that caused that. Thanks.
Well, alcoholic, I admire you go to state parks and camp. My sponsor goes all over the country with alcoholics and does that. And I really do admire it. And just so happens, the Marriott Courtyard is roughing it for me these days. God put three beautiful, wonderful wives in my life, and I squandered all of those relationships. Boy, I had some opportunities. I hit the jackpot three times, and it was the way it was meant to be that I was alone when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was not meant to impress anyone with the chips I was bringing home, because that's the nature of my pride. Look at me, look how well I'm doing. That'll just lead me right to another drink. And I was very lonely when I was new. As sick as that third wife was with something besides alcohol, I still pined for the one that was sickest. Anyway, but the experience that God gave me as a child, you know, when I was a young child, my father and mother and brother and myself went to the drive-in theater in Richmond and saw The Days of Wine and Roses. Now, for those of you who are younger, you may not know that movie, but it's about alcoholism. And it was like, I could still see it in my mind's eye, and God was giving me a preview of my life. And my father, I knew, was involved with AA. It was around 10, well, I was 10 when he started picking up white chips. And he picked up white chips for 26 years. And he had 5 years a couple times. My brother and my mother and myself created a new dynamic when he left us. We had a new family unit. We no longer needed his input. And he would get sober and he'd come back around and he'd want to come back home. And I remember I was so grateful when my mother came to us and said, "Do you want your dad to come back home?" I said, "Absolutely not." He would come to my Little League games. Knowing what I know now, I would say, "Dad, do you have an AA commitment tonight? Please go to that. I'll be just fine." But you know what? He was able, it took him 26 years. And he finally, I'll never discount the power of God to work in an alcoholic's life. He passed away 2 years ago with 30 plus years of sobriety and helped many, many men. We finally got our relationship right at the end of our lives, of his life. And we were able to be helpful to each other and make amends through the process of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was talking to another alcoholic before the meeting. I was joking with him, I'm stealing my thunder, because I said, you know, I encourage the guys that are separated from their family. Let's get the spiritual house built first before we try to put the family in a house that's unfinished. And I believe it serves them well. You know, it's usually two things, at least a year and at least get through the steps, both of those things in concert. Hey, if it doesn't happen, we'll work with it. You know, when a guy comes in and he's already got a girlfriend that's pulling him down, I say, let's work with it. I don't tell him to leave her. If we work with the circumstances the way they are. And it's an opportunity for growth. Now, my sponsor had me practicing all the steps from the beginning. Pages 86 through 88. Was my nuts and bolts blueprint for a living. And I give that to my guys. You know, I needed to know what I was supposed to do throughout the day. And it turns out I'm pretty good at following directions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. All right, moving over to page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
All right. This idea of walking side by side with somebody through this, it's life-changing for me. Having somebody take me through this was obviously helped me get sober, but when I started helping other guys that things really changed. To watch people, I think of this guy that came in and he's sitting on my couch. Well, I happened to be down in New Orleans a few years sober, and I was down there for a festival, and I happened to be awake at 3 in the morning because I was there and that's what I was doing. And I got a call from this guy, and he only had two phone numbers in the program.
And I happen to be awake when he called, and he's about to get arrested and all this, and he's pretty drunk. And I answered that phone call, and a few days later I was back in town, and we went to a meeting and we started going through these steps. And to see him like sit across from me on my couch and barely be able to put a sentence together and not look me in the eyes and just stare at the floor, and to watch him today with the life that he has, it's just, it's like, it's an honor and it's a privilege, and it's like the thing that keeps me sober is watching those miracles and those types of things happen. I had another guy, he had a few months sober, but he hadn't really done anything in the program. He didn't have a sponsor, he didn't do the steps yet. And him and his wife were leaving town and moving to Philadelphia. And so he had already, she had already moved up there, and he needed a place to crash for 3 weeks while he finished up his job with the military here before leaving. And he asked if he could stay on my couch. And I said, sure, you can stay at my place. And the first day I came home from work, he was like, hey man, so I don't know if you realize, but I haven't really done anything in the program in terms of steps or anything. Do you think we could maybe go through them while I'm here? And I was like, yeah, sure, definitely. And we sat down and made a whole little schedule for the next 3 weeks. We even built in 2 nights to go to a hockey game so we could have a little time off from it. But every day for 3 weeks, we went to a meeting and came back and got in this book. And we worked through these steps. And it was one of the most intense 3 weeks of my life doing that with him, because he was so gung-ho about it. And it was awesome. Like, I remember when we got to the fourth step, and we talked about doing the inventory, and it was like a Friday night, and he was like, all right. And then I was like, so yeah, like, you know, take the next couple of days, you know, over the weekend, whatever, you know, do this, and tomorrow we'll go to a hockey game and we'll relax a little bit. I went to bed, and the next morning I get up because I'm going to work, and he's like, Adita, he's like on the couch, he's like barely awake. I was like, what's up? He goes, I'm done, I did it, I stayed up all night, I did it. I was like, oh my God, bro, like, ease up. But like, yeah, like, he, you know, stayed up till 5 a.m. doing his inventory. And that day, right when I got home from work, we went through it. It was intense, but you know, he lives in Indiana, but you know, we're still on the phone once a month. And it's been cool because he recently had something happen in his life that I thought nobody would have happened, that I had happened a few years ago, and I was like, oh, that'll never happen to anybody. But every experience I've ever had, I've been able to share with others. Every single experience I've had in sobriety, somebody has come up to me, or I've heard somebody at a meeting, and I've been able to go up and be like, hey man, I went through that too. Or that's happened to me. And all of my experiences and others have been beneficial. My past has never been a waste. I've never wasted time in this life. All the mistakes I've made have been beneficial to somebody. So, I love that idea that when we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. I had everything I wanted at the end of my drinking. I had my own place, I had my own business, I was self-employed, I had checked off all the boxes of what to be successful in life meant. And I was walking around wanting to kill myself every day. So that's me getting what I want. And then I get in here and I turn it all over to this thing that I don't even understand and may never understand. And the cool things that happen are greater than anything I could have imagined. And it's not you hear the promises sometimes read, I don't know if you guys do them at this meeting, but you hear the promises and everybody hears like, you know, they think they're gonna get rich or something. You hear the financial stuff or whatever, and it's not that. It's my friend asking me after 10 years of a friendship, asking me, hey man, I'm going out of town. Him and his family were going out of town. Can you take care of my dogs for me? And like, he left me his house. You know, him and his wife and the kids went out of town. He's got this big house and a pool and a backyard and a fire pit. And I mean, he was years ago would have possibly come home to a dead body floating in the pool, you know, but instead, like, he trusted me to, like, do this, you know. And I remember sitting out there after work one day just watching the dogs run around and being like, I owed him something for this, you know. I felt somebody trusted me with living things. Like, this was, it was incredible. But that's the thing that I could never have planned for, but to feel that sense of gratitude and that kind of joy over something so simple, you know. And it's no surprise to me that in 10 years of knowing him, he had never asked me to do that before. And he'd gone out of town plenty of times, but I was not the person he asked to watch his dogs. Anyway, it's kind of neat. Those are the little things that happen that are pretty awesome. This idea of walking day by day in the path of spiritual progress, I really like that line, because on this weekend I'm actually taking a group of us are going, three guys I sponsor and two other guys, so six of us are going out to Shenandoah and doing some hiking and stuff, and it's just going to be really cool. And that line's going to kind of roll through my head about as we're walking on the trails, you know. Anyway, thanks.
Remember in that first week, my father lived out in Texas, and he said, Will, don't ever deprive another human being of the right to suffer. I went, oh yeah, nobody deprived me of that right. Oh, they may have been trying, but I wasn't having it. And I don't ever remember any interventions that I can remember, but that has served me well in helping other alcoholics. And when we start on this path, I am willing to give as much of my time as they want to have. I want to be generous with my time. And if I find they live in a part of town that's not convenient to come out my way, I'll go to the meetings where they go. I want to be a part of their life. In the last 7 days, John and I have been to 7 meetings together. We didn't go to one together on Wednesday, but we had 2 home group meetings on Thanksgiving Day, and we made the coffee at one of them. And I'll tell you what, I don't know about him, but my life keeps getting better. Walking this path with other alcoholics. And I told David last Tuesday, we were coming out here, and he called me today and he said, may I meet you and drive you? And I said, yes, thank you. These things are just what give me joy. And I understand, I get it. When an alcoholic isn't ready, I had to get ready. I had to get the job done. The only way I could do that is at the hands of alcohol. I couldn't think my way into being ready. I walked in here ready. I never figured anything out in my first year. Never once did I sit there reading the book and go, oh, I get it now. It happened when I was making the coffee. It was just an experience, and I go, oh, it's not just busy work. A newcomer just walked in with nowhere else to go, and I'm meant to help him. Then I start to have realizations and understanding of how this deal works. And I call it this deal because when I met with my sponsor at that picnic, we made a deal. And the deal is, I'm willing to go to any length to win victory over alcohol. I don't care how many years I get. I still have dreams at night where I really enjoy drinking. I love the taste and the smell of alcohol even today. When I was new, to show my gratitude, I started helping out at the church, and wouldn't you know, they had me serve the wine. And I caught a whiff of it and I was like, oh baby. But I didn't have the desire because I was working in the solution. And I remember a guy that said he was willing to go to any length. And every day he would call at the appointed time, and I would ask him the same questions my sponsor asked me. Were you able to say a prayer this morning? Well, no. Did you make it to a meeting yesterday? No. I said, okay. And it was coming up on 2 weeks, and I thought, you know, it's not helping either one of us, and I might have to have a conversation with him. And he called and he said, Will, this sponsorship thing really isn't working for me. And I said, oh, thank you so much for letting me know. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, most of the time they just go away and I never know what happens to them. And I'm very grateful when an alcoholic is courteous enough to tell me that they're moving on. I don't ever want to cut off a later opportunity to help that man. I said the last thing I said to him, if you ever find yourself asking God for help, give me a call. That's what happened to me. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, continuing on page 100. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap, and even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem.
Assuming we are spiritually fit. That's a big assumption right there, because there's times when I'm not drinking, but I wouldn't say I'm sober or spiritually fit in my head. You know, like I haven't drank in 7+ years, but my spiritual fitness waxes and wanes. And when things are right, I can go anywhere and do anything I want. And when things aren't right, I know better than to do that. I remember last year with the Caps, I'm into hockey, and the finals were going on, and I wanted to go out to a bar to watch a game. And I just knew I couldn't find anybody from the program or anybody that wanted to go. And the idea of going to a bar and just sitting there by myself to watch the game was like, probably not a good idea tonight. Maybe it would have been fine. I'm sure it would have been fine. But I just knew mentally I wasn't in a good space to go do that. I can think of another time. I was out on Collie Avenue here. I guess they do, it wasn't Greening again. It was for Halloween, where they shut down the whole street and they've got, you know, serving alcohol out on the street. And my friend's band was playing out there. And so anyway, me and another buddy, who was also sober, we went and we hung out there, and that ended. And everybody pours into the bars then to hang out. And my friend said, hey man, let's go over to Red Dog. I was like, I haven't been in a Red Dog in like 5 years. Why would I go in there? He goes, come on man, let's just go hang out. And I was like, all right, let's go hang out. So we went in there and we sat there and we got a little booth, and for about the first 10 minutes, I just stared at all the taps and I thought about all the beers I had yet not drank. And all, because this whole craft brewing thing came up after, which is really, I feel like I missed out, but I'm okay with that. But I spent the first 10 minutes just staring at these beers, watching other people drink. And then I was like, this idea of like, wait, why am I here? So I turned over to him and I was like, "What's going on, man?" And he just wanted to talk about work and some girl situation and all that. And so we just hung out, and I was there for a purpose. And it was all fine. I didn't think about it the rest of the night. We hung out for another 2 hours, and it was totally cool. But for the first 10 minutes, that's where my mind was. And I had to remind myself that my whole purpose for being today is to be of service to other people, and to turn my thought that way. So the idea of going places or having, friends hiding bottles. I had a friend who would always drink his beers in a coffee mug, and he'd go into his house and then he'd come back out with it full again. I was like, "Dude, you can, it's totally fine, man. You don't have to do that." And today he doesn't care. He's like, he drinks around me all the time. But I respect that. I think it's, you know, I get it, but it doesn't limit me in things that I want to do. That's all. Thanks.
Yeah, I like that. My spiritual condition waxes and wanes like the phases of the moon. And regardless of which phase, I do the same things. And in the mornings, I go out on my back porch and I get on my knees and I face the coming light and I seek the God of my understanding. And the God of my understanding is the light. And I remember in my first year, our home group had a book study on Thursday nights, and I had a work convention in Williamsburg come up, where I have a booth and I show my equipment, and the customers come. And I went to my sponsor and I said, he told me I had to be dead or drunk to miss home group. And I took that to heart. But he said, "No, Will, you should go take care of your work responsibilities." And when I got there, they had put my booth right adjacent in the bar area. And they gave me maybe a half a dozen drink tickets. And my customers started coming around, and I just started giving them the tickets. And they came over and talked to me, and they had their drink right up there in my face, and they had no idea what I'm up to. And I could smell it, but once again, I didn't have the desire because I was working in the solution. And, I was taught by my sponsor that we don't sit at the bar and look at the bottles. And but when we're safe when we go anywhere with another alcoholic. We're safe if it's necessary to be there. And it's safe if we have an escape hatch. And I took all these things to heart. All I got to do is follow the directions. I never was good at that. And I would not hesitate. I play golf, and there's a guy, I don't play with him a lot, but every time we get to the ninth hole, he says, "Hey, Will, can I buy you a beer?" I just say, "Well, thank you, but no thank you." He never asks why I don't have a beer. It's no big deal. I have people that I play golf with ask me to do something. I say, "No, I have another commitment that day." And they say, "What kind of commitment?" And I say, "Well, I'm a member of a service organization. And if I talk too much about it, it would rob me of the benefit I get from it." And that ends that conversation. Yeah, I never have to tell anybody I'm in AA unless it's necessary. If there's somebody that might need help, yeah, sure. I have people that I've been very close to that have no idea. It's just not necessary. The people that need to know. And this thing about having boundaries in life has just been such. I'd always thought freedom was having no responsibility, no commitment, no boundary, no wife to tell me I can't drink. Well, I had that freedom. Didn't work out so well. And now I have commitments that I keep, and it does. It's a very freeing thing to keep a commitment. Thank you.
All right. And knocked out at its home, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up. We will pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. And while the baskets are going around, are there any AA-related announcements?
Hi, I'm Rich. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Rich.
Hey, Rich.
AA 101's having our anniversary on the first Sunday of the year. That'd be on the 5th. I have some flyers sitting up on the table if anybody wants to grab them. Please come and join us. We're going to have bacon.
What?
And one yes, I said bacon.
Bacon?
There's going to be plenty of it. So come out and we're going to start at 10 for the evening, 11 for the meeting. We're going to have a speaker and it's going to be awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you. Will Alcoholic. The annual Oceanfront Conference is coming up February 14th, 15th, and 16th. If you've never been or you're new to AA, it's a great way to get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's always a special experience when you go to a conference like that and you see some of your peeps from the meetings you attend. Thank you.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Amy.
We will have supper beforehand that starts at 6 p.m. Please bring a dish if you'd like to share. And everyone is welcome. Find newcomers, bring them on down.
Yes. We have lots of flyers for this. They're a lovely red color over on the table. We would love for them to all leave the building today, so please take a few. And Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Okay. And is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety so that we can welcome you?
Jason,
welcome. Hey,
Jason.
Welcome.
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 We do have literature available at on the table to your left. There's pamphlets and also the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which we read out of this evening. And sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up and talk. And just a reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All our meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And in closing, can we thank our two Will and Amanda? After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, which is just up Colonial, right past 22nd Street. If you hit the railroad tracks, you've gone a little bit too far. And can someone read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Thank you, David.
Alcoholic David. Our book's meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little.
God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, and we'll close with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.